This is a Glass Box Media Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of This Week in Travel, the only weekly travel podcast which is not recorded on a weekly basis. We are coming live from T-Bex in Huntsville, Alabama at the Spring Suites Hotel downtown Huntsville.
Marriott Spring Hill Suites.
Oh, yeah. All right. I'm glad you got it. The lovely voice you're listening
in
to.
In the boardroom.
And we're on Facebook Live, not that anyone listening to this.
It's too late. You missed
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you missed it. Well, actually, there's a recording that should be up somewhere on Facebook. But anyways, it's the first time we've done it. And if you are watching on Facebook Live, in the lovely magenta, is it?
Fuchsia?
Fuchsia. There are color gradations like that that I am unaware of.
It's the Y chromosome that gets in the way.
Yes. Jen Leo, how are you?
Hey, Gary. Nice to see you again.
And you have the largest iPhone case I've ever seen.
It's a wallet.
That part didn't work quite as well for the audio audience, but...
Yes.
Nah.
All right, also, we're on a delay.
Chris Christensen, how are you?
I'm good.
And what did you do today?
I was at the Marshall Space Flight Center doing a tour. It's where America's rocket program has been based for the last 50, 60 years.
And so if people think it's in Florida or in Houston...
Well, that's where they launch them from Florida, but they built them here. So this is where the Saturn V was developed, for instance. So at one point, I was standing on top of the test platform where they test-fired the Saturn V rockets.
And I should note, we are doing this in the Von Braun room... Mm-hmm. of the hotel, which is the first time we've actually been in a room named after a member of the Nazi party. So we got that going for us. So what we normally do during these T-Bex live events is we rotate different guests through. So we're going to... The system is you introduce yourself, tell us what name of your website is, because we're all about self-promotion. And we'll go from there. And then what your website is about, what you do. So why don't we start out?
Sure.
Lean into the mic a little bit.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on the show. Sure. It's a first-time listener, actually. But I'm glad to see you guys here.
First-time listener, long-time caller.
You got it. So my name is Andy Avrextia. My website is called, I'll spell it out for you, it's A-V-R-E-X, so it's avrextravel.com. So it's a new website. Actually, I was at T-Bex Minnesota. I've done nothing on my website, but I'm now committing myself to, that's why I'm here, I'm committing myself to now going forward. The website's going to concentrate on what my wife and I like to do. We like road trips. We like nature, landscape. We like hiking. We like cycling. And we're going to tell our stories about that. I am taking a sabbatical from work, so I'm going to devote more time to this and more travel, hopefully. We'd like to extend beyond North America, maybe check out Europe or South America or Australia. So it should be an interesting ride, and we're looking forward to it.
Don't go to Australia.
Oh, okay.
Everything there will kill you. Yeah. People I know from Australia have actually left that country to come here.
Wow.
Because to America. So dangerous, yes.
Wow.
There is one...
That's foreshadowing, by the way.
There is one... A member of the animal kingdom in Australia that kills more people every year than the combined total of those killed by funnel web spiders, sharks, crocodiles, and venomous snakes.
Man. Is this a guessing game, Chris?
It is a guessing game, and if you don't know, we've got someone from Australia who I'm sure will be able to answer that question coming up in a bit. Who's rapidly Googling for...
Are we taking answers from our live listening audience?
It's like the answer, human beings.
Not counting human beings.
Then it would be jellyfish?
No, not more than jellyfish, too. Oh. I mean, more than the combined, even if you lump in the box jellyfish.
Well, it would be dingoes eating babies.
No, that's not true.
But anyways, this is going to happen a lot, so just kind of get used to it. So what do you hope to get out of T-Bex this time?
Just like in Minnesota, a bit more networking, trying to learn more about like affiliates, I'd like to monetize at some point. It's not a priority right now. Obviously, you want to build an audience and just learning from others and what they've done. There's some successful blogs out there. The other thing...
And I heard the guy who did the affiliate session in Minnesota that was crap, so...
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, wait, that was me.
Oh. I was going to say, it sure wasn't me.
The travel space is so huge, and I'm just wondering, you're going to probably meet a lot of new bloggers here. Like, is my thinking correct? I'm thinking that if I can just get 0.0001 of an audience, that's good. I'll get some hits, right?
As a percentage, yes. As a definitely. But building the audience is the hardest part. And it comes from quality of content and consistency.
Okay.
So, I would say.
So that's what you're going to have to
do. More than anything else. We'll talk to Johnny about consistency. He's been doing it longer than most of us. So.
Exactly. That's what I'm hoping to get from this, hoping to hear from people like Johnny or whoever's got some experience in building that audience. So that's what I'm hoping to get out of this.
Yeah. Cool.
Be consistent, right. Do interesting things, and
hustle. And Gary would add, be interesting.
Okay.
Usually.
I'm still working on that one.
Okay, so tell my story is what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, if you're not interesting, tell somebody else's story. That's what I do.
I can fake that, yeah.
All right, well, thanks right. for... Hey, kicking thanks. Off the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah,
thanks for joining us, Andy. Hey.
Do you know the answer of what?
Of course I do.
What animal? What member of the?
Wait till she gets to the microphone.
I say member of the animal kingdom.
I'm Australian. Honor everything.
And what is the answer?
Horses.
No, the bumblebee.
Oh, I just
10 people a year are killed by the bumblebee a year in Australia, while on average one person is killed by sharks, one by. Box jellyfish, mm-hmm. one by crocodiles, and there hasn't been anybody killed by venomous snakes in Australia since they invented any venom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's been.
Do you know why?
Yes, I do.
I talked to a herpetologist when I was in Alice Springs about this notion of dangerous Australian animals, and it is true that Australian snakes are the most venomous.
Correct.
However, they're not the most deadly mm-hmm. because they have very small fangs.
That's correct.
Interesting.
So, like in India, a viper will dig in further and inject its venom further, whereas in Australia, if you're wearing boots or even long pants sometimes, that's enough to protect you from a snake bite.
Interesting.
And often the snake won't inject the venom because it's so taxing to their energy. So they'll just bite without injecting.
Yeah, we've got lazy snakes in California.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyways, introduce yourself to those who are listening.
Hello, I am Caroline Makepeace. I am one half of whytravelblog.com, which I run with my husband, Craig. And we travel full-time with our two daughters.
And I was kind of referencing you before.
Yes.
You've recently left Australia for an extended trip here in the United States.
Yeah, that's right. We got a 3-year business visa with the purpose to travel across the U.S., we'll see if we can last 3 years or not, whether we want to kill each other before we pause. And
what's the longest trip you've done
as a family?
As a family.
18 months.
Okay.
As a family.
And
that's a long time.
Yeah.
At the end?
Yeah, we were pretty exhausted at
the
end. Yeah. And we were traveling in Australia, which is really kind of hard travel. Lots of, you know, long distances.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, we don't have that
roads.
In the U.S.
No, it's a small country.
It's a small country. Big country, but lots of places in between. So, yeah.
And the process of getting a business visa, so you have to show that you're a long-term traveler, but you're not going to be working here. You've got an external source of income. How hard was it?
Really hard. It took us about 9 months.
Interesting.
To get it done. We hired an immigration lawyer so we could get it done. Mm-hmm. And we got what's an O-1 visa, which is termed as an extraordinary alien.
There you go.
So you have to prove that you're extraordinary in your field.
Yeah, usually it means you're bringing special skills.
Yes.
So it's the same visa you would use if you were an Olympic athlete or a Nobel Prize winner.
Or an actress or actor.
Yeah, that's interesting. Or potentially a fashion model and future future first lady. But
I just think extraordinary alien.
Extraordinary alien?
Yeah.
It's a great term. Yeah.
But you've been, I saw the other day, you actually are doing, like, American stuff.
Yes.
American.
What type of American
Love
stuff?
America.
You went to a Durham Bulls baseball game.
Absolutely.
Now, I think most people when they come to the United States are not, like, minor league baseball.
And because you are such a baseball fan, as I understand.
It's, how do I compare it to cricket? I'm not sure.
She thinks baseball is slow, but she is a cricket fan. I gave her crap for that.
Yeah.
It's the only sports fans that cannot criticize baseball.
Caroline, can you get your kids to sit through a whole cricket match?
Do you know I've never tried?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never tried.
Your kids are old?
9 and 5.
Okay.
And I guess cricket, it's really about, like, you're up and moving, you're having barbecues and drinks, and so you're not sitting watching it.
Making hats from all your pint glasses.
Yes, yes.
Well, you know the strategy for kids in baseball.
No.
It's the hot dog in the third inning,
yep.
And then the nachos in the sixth inning,
oh. And
then something else if you make it to the ninth inning.
Wow, I wish you were there before I went the other day. We do love the seventh inning stretch. That's
sure.
My favorite part of it.
If the game goes into extra innings, they do another one in the 14th.
Oh, really?
Good to know.
Well, I hope I get to a game where it does that then.
Maybe.
No, you don't. It's going to be like 3 a.m.
Tie score.
So what are your plans for the next, roughly, I know you don't have detailed plans, for 3 years of traveling around the U.S.?
The rest of this year we're going to be on the East Coast, traveling up and down, and then we'll start heading over to the West Coast. There's nothing really concrete. We might be heading up to Michigan for the summer, and on the weekend we're going to Nashville.
Why Michigan?
Well, we love to travel. Our journey's called America Unplugged, and it's about getting the locals to share with us their, you know, hidden secrets. And so many people, we've just been in Raleigh hanging out with friends, and so many people said to us, Michigan is really beautiful, and it's great in the summertime. So we thought, well, we're pretty close. Why not go? And we had no other plans in place.
Pretty close being a relative term, yes. from Australia.
Yeah, I want to know who was telling you Michigan is so beautiful.
No, lots of people have. You'll have to follow our journey so that we can share the beauty.
So you're going to Detroit then?
Well, I guess we will, yeah. It's all part of the story.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Which Michigan?
Were you going to hold up your hand? And
upper and lower. Yeah. We'll do both.
Upper Michigan should be part of Wisconsin. I just want to make that claim.
The UP?
Yeah. You may not be aware of this, but the tourism slogan for Michigan was say yes to Michigan.
Oh, right.
And then in the Upper Peninsula, all their bumper stickers would be, say yeah to the UPA.
Okay, you have to explain that.
That is a Canadian joke.
No, it's an Upper Michigan joke, because they do the same thing.
Yeah.
So instead of say yes, say yeah to the UP, instead of to Michigan, A.
Oh, yeah, I'll get
they
it.
They got
now.
The same Canadian thing going on. It's kind of like Canada Light. Okay. That's the best way I would describe Upper Michigan. All right, anything else? Why don't you tell people where they can find you online?
Sure, Y Travel Blog, that's the letter Y.com, and it's Y Travel Blog on all the social channels.
And it is also the answer to the question of why travel.
Yes.
Why travel blog. All right.
Thank you very much for having me. That was fun.
Thank you, Caroline.
Thank you.
Who is going to be?
Brianna, take a step up.
Me? I'll come up. All right.
We're going in order of the first... Just there's a general line of who got here first, so I think I stopped keeping track after Johnny. So, hi, Brianna.
Hello.
Enter in, sign in, please.
Yes.
Introduce yourself. Who are you, and what do you do?
I can do that. My name is Brianna, and I am one half of our travel blog, which is called CrazyFamilyAdventure.com, and we are a family of 6 plus 1 dog who sold our house, bought an RV, and travel full-time now around North America.
I love it.
And we've been on the road in May. It's May now, right? It's 3 years we've been doing this for. So.
How big is your RV to hold that many people and animals?
In the last 2 months, we downsized to a 23-foot RV.
You wow. are kidding me. That is smaller than mine, and I only have 3 people and a dog.
It is tiny.
23.
We were in a 39-foot motorhome, you know, big Class A,
yes.
And then we downsized to a 23-foot Winnebago View, so it's a Class
C. So you downsized because it wasn't crazy enough, or?
Exactly. We got too comfortable. We got to push that comfort zone again.
Okay.
But you said you had how many kids?
4.
Okay, so 6 people. So
ages?
My kids are 9, 7, 7, and 5.
So 2 people sleep over the cab.
Yep.
Tell me the other bed situation.
There is a corner bed in the back that we took and put bunk beds in.
There we go.
So now 2 kids on the bottom, 2 on top, and then the table turns into a bed as well. So then when the kids get up at night, I can go there and lay with them. And so there's plenty of room.
I'm impressed. I'm impressed.
We're going to talk to him in 3 years, and he's going to be living out of a Prius.
No, this, I think we've hit our limit. We knew when we hit four kids it was our limit. I think we know this is our size limit. But it makes ease of travel very, very easy. Driving a 39-foot motorhome around the U.S., like, there's campgrounds everywhere, sure. But it limits what you can do. And 23 feet, we're like, you got a parking lot? We're there. We can pull in there. We can go anywhere. It's very easy to get around with this one.
And where are you going? Do you have a planned route, or are you letting the spirit blow you whether it will?
We live by the spirit. So, but to tell you where we're going to be next month, normally I'd say, I don't know, where should we go? But we do have a little bit of a plan right now that we are planning on going up to Nashville. So hopefully meet up again with Kaz and her family there. Unexpectedly, but ended up at the same place. And then from there, we're actually going to stop in Wisconsin, where we're originally from, and then head up to Canada and do
Bay. Where in Wisconsin?
Kenosha.
I'm sorry.
On the border. Oh, no, no.
I'm from Appleton.
Oh, okay. Okay, so you're like a true Wisconsin. We're like Wisconsin, Illinois. Like
Gary's mom and my mom are... Gary's mom lives in the town where my mom grew up in Wisconsin.
Awesome.
So it's not really Appleton. It's Hortonville.
Yeah, okay. Yep, and we did a lot of played soccer growing up, so a lot of traveling all the different places. Wisconsin's beautiful in the summer too, Kat. But then from there, we'll go to Banff and then Jasper and then head back down. And then our plan is that in January, we head down to Baja, California, and we do the Baja Peninsula all the way down and up for 6 months.
Excellent. So just curious here, what resources do you use to check into your different stays, and how long do you stay at each location?
So the resources totally vary depending on what we're doing.
Like, are you using RV America or...?
All of the above, really. So we do some boondocking, which, if people that aren't familiar with RVing, means that you don't hook up anywhere. So when we're going to do boondocking, we usually do, like, freecampsites.net and go on there and search and find places.
And what's the legality of that in the U.S., and how does that vary from state to state?
There is no legality around it. If a place says you can come... Well, usually if you're going to, like, a national forest or a state forest, something allows you, there's a sign that says, like, you can stay for up to 14 days. And then you're like, oh, sweet, okay, we can. You can stay in Walmart parking lots overnight.
Sure, yeah.
Some let you, some don't, so you always want to call ahead, things like that. But on this freecampsite.net, they list the places, and then they also will have notes from other people that have either been there or not been there and kind of, like, tell you, like, well, we think it was okay, or the cops drove by, they said it was fine. You know, so you kind of have other people that have been there to kind of check in on. But BLM land around, you know, is usually
Bureau of Land Management.
Yes.
So how does it work staying on BLM? Do you literally just drive to an open spot and say, oh, this looks like a good place to park?
Some places, yes. Other places, it'll be like a fire pit. So, like, you'll know, like, it's kind of, they'll say, try to find a fire pit area, since then you're not, like, destroying extra land that doesn't need to be. So they really recommend that you find somewhere you can tell someone else has stayed before, but it's not, like, a rule. Like, you kind of can just go and...
Have you ever gotten a knock on the door, like, after dark and... been a little bit concerned
the
about
only place
who might
we
be on
did,
the other side?
Yeah, well, it's a fear, obviously, but the only place we did was actually in the McCormick Center parking lot in Chicago.
Okay.
Which was a truck parking lot. So truckers coming in and out, but you can pay and stay there overnight. You're right, we could walk to downtown. It was perfect. And we got a knock on the door. My husband and I looked at each other. We're like,
what do we do?
It ended up being a trucker that was, like, asking for, like, if we could borrow our cell phone, which we're still like, But no, other than that, like, no, like, people are really... pretty respectful and, like, pretty nice about it. People really appreciate that we have this land to use, so everyone's very, you know, they leave you alone. Like, it's not as scary as it kind of sounds like it would be, so. But, yeah, and then we also use Reserve America, National Park Campgrounds, State Park Campgrounds. There isn't really a limit. It's just more like we Google, like, oh, Nashville campgrounds, and then you kind of see what comes up. Or if you know you're going to state park, you look at, you know, recreation.gov, and there's just a variety of different ones out there.
Is that why you downsized to 23? Isn't 25 feet the limit for staying at certain parks?
There isn't really one limit that can say will get you in everywhere, but normally if you're 30 feet or under, you're going to probably get in at most places.
Okay.
Like, where we're going in Canada now, being 25 feet and under, got us into a lot of places, especially booking it later in the year when most people booked it, you know, 9 months ago. We don't plan that way.
Banff is absolutely gorgeous.
We can't wait. We love Glacier National Park, so we can't wait to get up to Banff and see what that's all about.
Go get your pictures taken at Lake Louise.
Yes, we're staying at Lake Louise in the campground there.
Oh,
so,
nice.
Yes, super excited about it.
You want to get to Lake Moraine, just right next to Lake Moraine, Louise. I would also recommend going over the border to Yoho and Kootenay National Park, which is just the other side of the border from Alberta.
Yep.
There's some neat stuff. You can do that on a day trip.
Okay,
I don't think
perfect.
There is... They're not as popular as Banff and Jasper.
Yeah, we actually did an episode last year on four national parks just over the border there into British Columbia.
No, so we'll definitely check it out, because that's what we want off the beaten path.
And take the kids to, I think it's Drumheller for the Dinosaur Museum.
Yeah.
It's out of this
Drumheller
world.
Okay, Drumheller is in central. It's halfway up between Calgary and Edmonton. And the Royal Tyrrell Museum of Paleontology in Drumheller is one of the finest museums of paleontology in the world.
Awesome.
And you can see an Albertosaurus.
It's amazing. Absolutely amazing.
We can't wait. We wish we were going for longer. We have some commitments to be back in Wisconsin. I think we could spend, like, you know, 4 or 5 months, which is how we like to travel, really get in somewhere and spend a lot of time.
You also probably want to stop at Waterton Lakes, which is the other side of...
We did. We've been there. When we stayed at Glacier National Park last year, we drove and spent a day there. It was amazing.
And the best named Canada National Park is right near there, which is Head Smashed In Buffalo Jump.
I did not see that one. I'll check that one out.
Head smashed in Buffalo Jump. Kids will enjoy that.
That's funny, Chris.
At least if you have boys.
Yep, 3 boys. So.
Brianna, tell us the name of your site one more time.
It's Crazy Family Adventure. Makes sense, right?
Yes, .com. And are you on Instagram, too?
We are on all social, pretty much as Crazy Family Adventure. If that's too long, it's CF Adventure.
Excellent.
All right, thank you guys
thank
for
you
having
for
me.
Joining
so
us.
So much fun. Thank you.
Have a good conference.
Thank you.
Come on up, Johnny.
Once again on the show, we probably have to count out how many times he's been on the show.
Half a dozen? He is the...
he's up there.
Yeah.
I was doing a Facebook Live of your guys' Facebook Live. But I was putting...
I was putting filters on.
Oh, look at those Cupid hearts. I like it. Thank you, Johnny.
Hey, Papa.
Hello.
So introduce yourself to the world.
My name is Johnny Jett. I have a website called johnnyjett.com, J-O-H... N-N-Y-J-E-T, 1-T. I'm not related to Joe.
Is your first time in Huntsville?
It is.
What do you think?
You know, I haven't seen much, but I was very impressed by the airport.
So was I. Many screens.
I was like, this place is sweet.
I think people underestimate this place because it is kind of a tech hub for the region. You have a Department of Defense installation. You got a NASA installation.
More PhDs per capita than any city in the U.S.
Wow.
I did not know that.
That is what they will tell you.
I have heard that. And did you see all those military signs when we got into the airport? So I knew about NASA, but I didn't read something.
NASA came here because the Redstone Arsenal, which was the Army's rocket program, was already here. So the rocket program predates World War II in Huntsville.
I don't know anything about
right,
that.
Right around the time. I think it predates World War II. I think it goes back to some of the work by Goddard and some of the people who started.
Well, isn't this where the first liquid-fueled rocket was...
I think so.
...was launched?
But yeah. then NASA moved here 50 years ago, something like that.
Yeah. I was surprised Boeing was here, too. You know, I took a picture of, I guess, this airport had the big Boeing sign and everything. Everyone's... 20 people guessed Seattle.
Johnny, did you make it out to where you wanted to go today?
No, I did not.
Tell us a little bit about that place, though, because that's
But
it's a neat aside to Huntsville.
40 miles away is the unclaimed baggage center, which is where I've wanted to go for a long time, because when the airlines lose your bag...
Because you're still looking for a bag?
Yeah, when the airlines lose your bag, these guys buy it after, I think it's a month. I'm not quite sure, but, you know, you can buy anything... supposedly from a wedding ring to a coffin. And I don't know how you lose a
It sounds a like
coffin.
A glorified pawn shop.
Well, I heard it's like as big as Costco, and the deals aren't great on electronics. They're like the same prices as a regular store, but supposedly they're good deals on
suitcases.
But it is a good reminder that make sure you have a tag on the outside of your bag and also on the inside
you
of your
got
bag.
That right.
Have something that has your identification, because if not... They try and find the owners of this, the airlines.
If it gets ripped off, the tag gets ripped off.
I left a bag in January when we were at the New York Times Travel Show and in my taxi, which is one of the dumbest things I've done in 10 years of traveling.
Did it have your camera equipment?
No, nothing expensive other than a Sonicare USB toothbrush and some clothes.
That's TMI, Gary.
A toothbrush?
I don't know. I don't want to have a visual of you.
I was assuming that he brushed his teeth. This really
but anyways, I wonder they do that with taxis. Like they'll because there's no way I could have tracked that taxi down, which was by the way another way reason to use Uber over a taxi because I could have tracked the guy down.
Yeah, I left an SLR and a taxi in Buenos Aires.
Yeah, it's kind of just gone.
So you left what?
An SLR, a camera.
Camera.
Oh no.
So. Well, you should always ask for a receipt from the taxi. That way, at least has their cab number, and then you can call the company, and then they can get a hold of them.
Yeah, I don't. I never use a carry-on. It was in the trunk, and I shouldn't have put it in the trunk. And when I left the hotel, like the doorman hailed the cab, opened the trunk, and put my luggage in, and then I just didn't even think about it when I got out. And
JohnnyJet.com and the man himself is a never-ending book of travel tips. Johnny, today you told me a really, really smart one. Come on and tell us again about your weather tip.
That's a joke. People are going to think
I don't think it's a joke. I've never heard of it before, and I thought it was brilliant.
All right. Well, I don't think other people will, but I appreciate that you do. But anyway, so I use the weather app, and I list all the places where I'm going.
Show our little Facebook Live camera over there, please.
For our radio audience, Johnny is currently showing me.
So I know, first of all, I know where I'm going, but secondly, I know all the weather. And, you know, Jen was like, "You're going to Irving, Texas?" And I was like, "Well, it's DFW Airport." She's like, "Well, you're not going outside the airport." I was like, "Of course not." But
here's the smart tip part. Everybody listen.
I want to know what the weather is there, because if it's going to be bad weather, I can look into changing my flight to a different layover city.
Have you ever thought of that before?
I always look at the weather kind of where I'm going.
But you would have never even thought to put an airport as a weather item in your weather app so that you can monitor it for delays.
If you put Dallas as opposed to Irving, it's pretty much the same weather. You're looking for storm fronts and stuff like that. The difference is I would rather, I'd probably just take the, you know, if I got bumped or something or get another flight, I'd just take that. I wouldn't look to rebook it or anything.
I naively assume that they're all going to work out.
Hey, and last night, you know, I also use the My Radar weather app, since we're talking about weather. And it was pretty cool to see, sitting across the aisle from me was a captain. You know, he was deadheading or whatever. And I saw him bring it up to see what the weather was going to be like for this flight. And I saw him kind of like open his eyes a little bit. I was like, oh boy, it's going to be a rough one.
Really?
And then the pilot told the flight attendants to, you know,
stay seated.
Yeah. But actually, it wasn't too bad.
Tell us the name of that app again.
My Radar.
My Radar.
The weather app I use, because I actually go through a lot of weather
rain
stuff.
Spotting?
Just use weatherbug.com. Mm-hmm. Because what it does is it can, I don't know if for travel it helps, but if you can set up a these like home weather stations. Mm-hmm. Where it'll have like a gauge for collecting rain, temperature, wind speed, and it can aggregate all these things. So literally when I'm at home, when I look for temperature for Minneapolis, you don't know where the temperature is, but I know it's at Jefferson Elementary School, several blocks away from where I live, so I know the exact spot of where the information is taken. Huh.
My real trick with weather is to live someplace that doesn't have any.
Thank you, Chris. I was, you know, they're speaking Latin to me. It's 74 degrees Fahrenheit.
I came from Minneapolis to Alabama.
Every day in San
Diego. It's warmer today in Minneapolis than it is in Alabama.
Yeah.
That's my luck.
Hey, Gary, next time we're doing a show and you're at your house, can you give us a little shot of your weather station?
I can try.
Yeah, I want to see it. I want to see this magical weather station.
Well, you don't have a weather...
He was just talking about it.
I had one in my old house before I started traveling.
He uses something that uses... crowdsourced weather stations.
But
the weather bug.
But no, I thought about doing it. And I have it packed away somewhere. At this point, it's 10 years old, so I'd be better off getting a new one. But I could put it on like the outside of my
But Minnesota
balcony.
Seems weather heavy enough that you could use a little home station.
Yeah, I would have fun playing with it.
When we visited relatives in Wisconsin and Minnesota and such when I was a kid, I couldn't understand why they kept talking about weather. It's like everybody's talking about weather, but I grew up in some place that really didn't. It wasn't worth talking about.
Spoken like a true Californian, Chris.
So my next weather app, my last one, which you're going to love, is called Weather Pup.
Ah.
So it has like 200 different puppies. So whatever, depending on the weather. So this guy's happy because it's hot and sunny in Miami. But this guy is not too happy, and this guy is sleeping right here.
Is there a cat
because
version of weather?
See, Johnny, that's so distracting that I don't think I would ever look at the numbers. I'd just be looking at the dogs the whole time.
But the dogs convey the information.
Yeah.
That is an app I will not be installing.
Hey, Johnny, tell us about your time here at TBEX. What are your goals? Let's pimp your panel.
My goal is to hang out with my friends and meet some new ones. and I'm doing a really good panel tomorrow that you need to check out. Jen's going to explain it.
You don't actually know what you're doing on her panel. Is that what you're saying?
No, I know.
He knows. No, I'm moderating a panel this time about pivoting. So pivoting your career as your life changes. So Johnny is one of the panelists, as is Lily Marshall. And I don't know how to pronounce her name. No, I don't know how to pronounce her name. Hallie Massey?
Okay.
And anyway, they are all going to be talking about the different big life changes and how it affected their blogs and their businesses. And we're going to be on at 2 o'clock tomorrow in the content room.
2 o'clock. I'll be there.
All right. Thanks for joining us, Johnny.
Thanks for having me.
JohnnyJet.com on Twitter at JohnnyJet.
We have no idea who came next, so we're hoping you guys
I think it's Danny. Is it Danny?
David.
David? Hi, David. Introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm David Nuttall with Archimaps. I do hand-drawn, plausible, fictitious maps.
So you have the shop at the...
Low Mill Arts.
Low Mill? Yes.
Oh, okay.
I was just going to crack a joke about you being a local.
Thank you.
But you are.
I am. Yes, I am the local speaker.
But you're not from here.
Really?
We're guessing.
Yeah. I've been here 20 years.
Okay.
So does that make me from here?
No. It doesn't.
It means you live here.
So it means I live here.
It depends on where you are in the world. I know that in upstate Vermont, where I had a roommate that grew up, he said there was literally a obituary one time in the newspaper of so-and-so of New York died at the age of 80 yesterday, having lived in upstate Vermont for 79 years. So it depends on what region you're in. Here, I suspect it's a little easier to get to be a local.
I suspect I'm not considered a local. Even though Huntsville is quite cosmopolitan, no.
So you draw maps of places that don't exist.
That is true.
Do people tend to use those very much for navigation, or?
I hope some do. And I actually do encourage my customers to lie. So when they take home one of my maps, put it on their wall, invite their friends to figure out where it is.
So does anyone fact check your work?
I have actually had some people fact checked. I finished a map recently that was set in Iran. I learned how to write Farsi so that I could write the correct script, and some people came in who actually could speak Arabic, and they read it, and it said, actually, that is accurate. The places themselves, people do try and get a sense of, could that exist? So that's what I want to convey, this might exist. So my travel is kind of vicarious through my maps. I go all over the world and make up a place that could exist there.
What's an example?
So why? I saw your
I saw the
work.
Thinking.
Yeah, why? I saw your work why? When I was back here. I loved it. Beautiful, beautiful artwork.
Thank you.
But I didn't know the answer to the question, so it's wonderful to meet you. How did you get started doing this?
I get a lot of people ask me why.
Yes.
Followed closely by, what's wrong with you? What did you take to be able to do this? I started drawing maps when I was 5. And I always drew what I call fiction.
But nobody bought you an atlas was the problem.
I actually had lots of real maps as well.
Okay.
So I love real maps. I'd sit in the car and navigate. I'd try and steal the map and navigate
sure,
places.
Yeah.
And my brothers and sister didn't like that because I'd end up on a little farm road going to a disused railway station or something that intrigued me on the map. I didn't do fantasy, so I didn't do treasure maps. I didn't do inspired by novels. My maps in my mind were real places. So it was my escape as a child. The genesis really took off at a family holiday. I'm from England, beach holiday in the summer, so it rained every day. So I entertained myself by drawing a map on a sheet of A4 paper. Well, I finished it. It's still raining, so I drew the next one. And I ended up with 30 pages of a map that took over the whole floor.
So what's an example of a place you would make a map of? Are you doing things like people would know, like Westeros or
no,
things like that?
Excellent question. I tend to stay away from other people's work, so from a copyright. And also, if I did a map of Game of Thrones, there's plenty of people out there online that would abuse the heck out of it because they have their own preconceived ideas or their own concept of what it would look like. So mine are very much based in the real world. So the last one I just completed was set in South Africa. So I study Cape Town, I study the grids, the type of buildings, the density, public transport, terrain. So I'm trying to understand the culture of a place through its maps and aerial photographs. Thankfully, Google Street View exists now, so I can actually get a sense of scale. And then I set all the research aside, and then I start drawing. And I just make it up as I go from what I have garnered from my research.
So it's like an alternate universe Cape Town?
Yeah. It is alternate in that it could exist. Is my
start.
When I explain what I do as hand-drawn, plausible, fictitious maps, that's a mouthful. But it does really explain what I do. My short version is I draw real maps of fake places.
Okay, so David, I saw you last night in line to get our sandwiches.
Yes.
And you told me about an incredibly fascinating map that you draw. Tell us about this one particular special canvas that you draw on.
I draw maps on a variety of surfaces, and the later series is on the human skin. So I draw
maps. God, I was just going to make a joke about that.
Clearly you didn't talk to him last night, Gary.
And you haven't pulled up my Instagram. So I have a characteristic. My wife has told me to stop using compulsion as the description for carticocoeothes, which is a term for seeing maps and terrain in things.
Okay.
So in the same way that there's an apophenia to see random things as a pattern,
yeah,
people see all sorts of strange shapes and things. I'll look at that woodwork on a door and go, that's contours, that's a map. But I'm not seeing something that exists, I'm seeing something that could exist.
So,
and that extends to flesh, where I'm seeing the terrain of the body as a potential base map that I can draw.
And I don't know how to ask this question. When you're drawing on human skin, it is still attached, one would assume?
Thankfully, yes. Okay. The best question I've had multiple times in the studio is, are the models live? To which point, no, I like cadavers. Or I'm not sure that what they mean is, have I got a photograph of someone and drawn on the photograph?
I see.
Am I drawing on the skin and then photographing?
The picture I saw was of somebody.
If you're looking for some skin, I know a skin guy. Just let me know. I can.
I'm not sure I need to know your skin guy. That sounds.
I'm not going
to
record it. But
mildly suspicious.
So, what kind of ink or paint do you use if you're making a map on a human body?
I draw everything. I'm very particular as an artist that I can't paint.
Okay.
So I do hand-drawn. So I use a water-based, non-toxic acrylic paint pen, which has a chisel tip, so I can get fairly fine lines. It's not ticklish, so it's not like a paintbrush.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I bet it's
also
ticklish.
It's not a tattoo.
It's not a tattoo.
Okay,
so it's not a tattoo. Correct. It washes off.
You cannot guarantee that it's not ticklish.
And then he's photographing that.
So are you doing it on the person's back?
Yes. Show him your picture, David.
I will draw it on wherever.
Show him the picture you showed me last night.
Which one did I show you?
For those of you who are in the audio
let's
version
let's just say
of this,
it wasn't...
He's bringing up a picture.
I mean,
this doesn't make really great audio.
It was a decent-sized canvas.
You can make some interesting topographic maps on a human body.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, well, I've got a whole folder of...
It was a white woman, and I think she was laying down on her side.
Anyway. Was it the front or the back?
Her back! Okay. Oh my gosh, I haven't seen any from the front. Maybe we want to see those, Gary.
Well, there's definitely ones from the front.
Perhaps for our audience, you could give us your Instagram.
All right, pass that a little closer.
So people could actually look it up.
ArtiMaps, ArtiMaps.
And your studio, people can walk in and watch you do this, although maybe not this.
This one, I black out the windows.
That seems like that might be a good idea, but in general...
Yeah, I'm...
This is wild. Look at this, Gary.
Because you were at a very interesting space, art space here in Huntsville.
She's pretty neat and tiny down there.
Low Mill Arts and Entertainment. Which we were lucky enough, we hosted the VIP speaker reception last night.
Holy crap!
They're off on a tangent over there because they've now got the photographs.
Just ignore them.
Chris, you want to see some booby?
No, that's okay.
All right, I'll pass it back.
Yeah, I don't normally hand over my phone to people just because.
That's what a microphone will do.
It's not a visual medium. So, people can come in and visit. All of the studios at Low Mill are working studios. So we're not art galleries. It is the place where you create.
It is a very fun space.
Bizarre that Huntsville has the largest privately owned arts facility in the country.
It is bizarre.
200 artists in one building.
Yeah. So back to question, why did you move here?
I was working in England. I was a cartographer working for the British government. So
and they got tired of you making up maps.
I took fictional maps to my interview to get the job when I was 16, and they hired me. So I worked there, and my wife actually is from Huntsville. And she was stationed over in England for 3 years working on a contract where we were buying more modern hardware and software for the mapping. So we met there, got married, we made a deal. She'd been there 3 years, so I would move here for 3 years to see if we liked it and then make a decision. The bonus 17 years, we still haven't made a decision to go back. So I'm here in Huntsville. Fair enough. I will admit there is a hint of an advantage to it. I stand out a little more here. Not only am I slightly weird in what I do in terms of make-up places, my accent does actually help break the ice at certain locations. You go to rural America with whatever this is, and people go, ooh, he's smart, regardless of whether you are or not.
Well, I think the Low Mill Arts is a fantastic place. It was why I was so excited to come here.
Well, I'm glad you came to visit last night, and it's a gem that is starting to get recognized for what it actually is. Mm-hmm. And the family that own it, the Hudson family, are just brilliant supporters of the arts for doing this with their money and staying in Huntsville with it.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for joining us.
Absolutely.
Tell us again one more time where people can find you online.
You can find me online, Artimaps, ArtiMaps, on Facebook, Instagram. Instagram's every other day. That's where you'll see censored everything.
And come to you for all your fake map needs.
All my fake. You can't get lost. That's my new tagline.
I like it. Thank you so much, David.
Guys, thank you.
All right.
Life, are you next?
Life, you're next.
Hello.
Hello. You've been on the show
Welcome
before.
Welcome back.
Yes, I have.
But tell everybody who you are.
My name is Leif Pedersen from Minneapolis, Minnesota. Let me think here. I was a travel writer for 12 years. Then I got a little frustrated with that and then became...
Just like
switched
eating
to the,
as a travel writer.
Right. Yeah. No, that's
on a regular
it,
basis.
Eating and sleeping. That's more or less what I do now. And then I switched to the dark side. I worked for Mall of America for a couple of years. I was their tourism communications manager. While I was doing that on my nights and weekends, I wrote a book called Backpacking with Dracula. It is a history travel book and funny. And this
that's
is my ninth,
if you have to say so yourself.
This is my ninth T-Bex. I figured that out yesterday when they were slapping little stars.
And there have
badge.
Been 19 total.
So, all right.
Wait, how many have you been to?
Nine.
He's been to nine. He's been almost half.
Okay,
almost
I'm gonna have half. To count mine up. I think. Keep going.
Well, yeah. I mean, it took a while. Anyway, so that's me. Here I am. I'm happy to be here.
And you're no longer working for the mall.
Nope. I am off. Seeking new adventure, TBD.
Anybody who has a destination who wants representation in Minnesota should contact.
Absolutely, I know all there is to know about it. No, you know, I actually love Minneapolis a lot. I was born and raised there, and I hope to keep living there. But in Minnesota too. So, but I'm biased. But nevertheless, it is the best place in the country.
And not just to try and help Life get a job, but when you were in at TBEX in Israel, where we didn't do a show. Because we just couldn't get our act together. You did a presentation. You talked about some of the different social media campaigns you had done at Mall of America.
Some of them were mine, and then a lot of them were others that I just found
so
that I liked.
My favorite of those was the Twitter snow.
Twizzard.
Tell people what you guys did, because I think this is...
Unfortunately, I wasn't even there for this. They did this just a few months before I got hired.
Yep.
So what the mall did, they did this for two Black Fridays in a row when they were trying to bring people in for shopping after Thanksgiving rather than go shop online. So what they did was they had snow machines in the main event space, which is called the Rotunda, and a giant thermometer, and they had a hashtag Twizzard. And every time somebody tweeted using that hashtag, the thermometer would inch up a little bit, and every time it reached 1,000, it would snow indoors.
That is so cool.
Twitter
the thermometer
blizzard.
Go lower to get
Yeah, but I mean it's not the the visual that humans want to see.
Okay.
So it started freezing, and when it got to
And what I loved is they showed a video, and the video's online, I think.
Yep, it's on YouTube.
Yeah, so you can see a video on YouTube of the wonder on people's faces as they're in the mall and it starts to snow.
Little kids just lose it.
Yeah, adults were losing it too.
Adults were.
What did they do about the water?
Maybe they were drunk. I don't know. It's not actual snow. It's that fake snow.
So they lied.
So, no, yeah. Fortunately, there isn't pools of water on the ground for people to slip and hit themselves on the head because they probably felt that was not safe and... in a very busy mall on Black Friday to have people slipping and falling. Yeah. So, that, and I agree. That was one of the things where I was like, ooh, I'm going to really like this job when I, because I did some homework before my job interviews with them, multiple interviews. And I was like, this is really cool. This is going to be a lot more interesting than I imagined. And I was right. It was a wild ride.
Well, and the other example that I liked in terms of what a company can do if they're responsive was how you guys responded to the whole Pokemon Go.
Yep.
So you've got people who are now doing Pokemon Go in the mall, which sounds like it could be good in the sense that bringing people to the mall, but one, they're walking through the mall, looking at their phones, walking into people.
Yep.
So you got a problem.
So, and this was part of the good thing about working at the mall. The marketing department had minimal oversight and, you know, a lot of freedom. And we were allowed to take risks. And, you know, you weren't slapped on the wrist if the risk, you know, if it went bad, that was just a lesson moving on forward, you know. And so it gave people a lot more freedom and courage to try these things. So Pokemon was released on a Friday. By Monday afternoon, because you know we don't work on weekends, so Monday morning we walked in and realized that this was a thing. It wasn't just a fad for little kids, because people, the mall, because it's a busy place, had tons of Pokestops and three gyms, I believe. So it was already busy by Monday morning, and we realized that we needed to do something. A, to make it cool, but B, to get all these people that aren't paying attention out of the way of the people that are trying to get somewhere. And so by end of day Monday, we had two Poke lounges set up right where the gyms are. The gyms are where Poke
players. So you couldn't pick the locations.
We had to put them where, you know, where the people were sitting and, you know, congregating and doing their battles in the gyms. So we had couches out. We had chargers for their phones out. Just place to get them out of the way, but comfortable. And that got us a good bit of exposure on the news, because we were the first people to, you know, recognize it was a thing, do something to make it cooler or nicer or whatever. And so part of the reason for that reason and other events, not just Pokemon, we were just able to pull things off really fast because we're a small group and we had a lot of latitude.
Very cool.
And, so smart.
And he's available.
Yes, and now, yes, I am. I'm off. I've got 15 years now in the travel and media industry, and I'm going to see where that takes me.
We flew in on the same flight.
That's right.
Because you were also...
And you were telling me about this thing you announced just before you left the mall, the Writer-in-Residence program.
Yes, my last big... I did. Well, so this year, 2017, is the 25th anniversary of the mall. They're calling it a birthday, so it's more festive. But the mall's having the 25th anniversary. We needed a way for... We wanted two things. We had two goals that were set out for us. Change perceptions... Probably frozen 15-year-old perceptions of the mall, people that visit there or just went there. But, you know how it is. You get an idea of a place, and even as it's changing in front of you, you don't really notice because you're there all the time. So we wanted to update perceptions about the mall because it is very different now than it was even 5 years ago, never mind 15, 25 years ago. But two, spread the word that it was the 25th anniversary, more importantly. So I was thinking to myself, how can I get both of those things done and have it be earned media? Not like we have to put up billboards and pay.
Sure.
I want people to do this for me. And so I came up with the Writer-in-Residence program. So I basically took the Amtrak Writer-in-Residence idea and the Heathrow Airport Writer-in-Residence idea, and I put them together to make our own thing. So we made it into a contest, and we invited people to apply by sending in their pitches. And we asked for all their social media stats, but that wasn't really as important as the pitch. We wanted original creative ideas, not like a blow-for-blow, what I did at the Mall of America type thing. And then there was going to be a semifinal group of 25 people, one for every year, 25 years at the Mall, 25 people, and they were going to send in longer, more thought-out essays, and then there was going to be a winner. And that person, coming up later this summer, is going to sit in the middle of the mall, out in the middle with everybody around them.
In a Pokemon gym or
probably nearby, and just write. And people, they're gonna be in the mall, obviously. People are gonna be invited to come and talk to them just so they can talk to other people, get their thoughts on the mall, and just write whatever their story pitch was that got accepted.
Life, was the winner David Barry?
I don't know though. I don't think they've announced the winner yet. Anyway, so fortunately, I was very right, and we got 4,200 and something applications,
oh my gosh,
and virtually every publication covered it. because it was just so creative. Mall of America, why would Mall of America have a right and red? This is just so wacky. And, you know, it ranged from that to, this is the dumbest thing I've ever, you know, and didn't matter to me. I was just happy that everybody was talking about it.
Right.
And within 24 hours, it wasn't just all the media. It was all the writers' groups. Like, I was getting notes from friends like, all my Facebook groups are talking about this. And I was on vacation at the time. I was in Costa Rica going, is this going to fail? Is this going to fail? And it was so, I was just like, yes, nailed it. And that was my last gift to the mall.
Do you get all the hot dog on a stick you could eat?
No.
As part of the Mall of
America. Hot dog and a stick. Are you confusing that with the state fair, I believe?
Explain. No, our mall has hot dog and a stick.
We do have stuff on sticks, but that's not really
hot
the
hot dog and a stick, they have the best outfits. These.
And the best lemonade.
Oh, is that the name of an actual...
Yes. It's corn dogs. It's corn dogs and lemonade, right. and that's all they sell.
We don't have that in Minnesota.
And cheese dogs.
We have everything else on a stick at our state fair.
It looks like it should fit in Minnesota. I'm surprised you don't have one. You should get one.
Explain the in-residence part. Where do they sleep?
There are two attached hotels to the mall. We made an agreement with the Radisson Blu, one of those two hotels. So, yes, it was
a lovely hotel.
So they literally don't step foot outside for 5 days. And I arranged several fam trips, press trips to the mall like this. Every year we had a fam trip called Minnokota, where we'd bring bloggers to Minnesota in February with no coats. Minnokota. An idea that was... the hashtag we got
Johnny,
from Natalie Scala.
Yeah.
And Johnny and Natalie were there. Natalie came up with the hashtag.
I did not know
and
that.
We used it for the subsequent years because it was too brilliant to not use it. So Natalie is.
And how can you be in Minnesota without coats in the wintertime?
Because you have to step a foot outdoors at the mall if you don't want to. You arrive at the airport, there's an underground train that takes you straight from the airport to the front door of the mall. So you're kind of outside in the elements for about 20 seconds. But then the mall is its own little city. There's two attached hotels, 50 restaurants, all these activities, and I would program 3 days in the mall, and none of it had anything to do with shopping. It was just activities and eating, and I did this for 3 years while I was there. The mall is a place where you could theoretically survive and get along just fine without having to step foot outdoors, which
sounds
is
like
the writer-in-residence idea.
Sounds like a perfect birthday trip for Cora's 13th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
No,
oh my goodness. Teens and tweens, this is, I mean, that is their holy land. So, yeah. But, yeah.
Look, there are visitors who fly to the mall.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Just to the mall.
Just
go
to the
shopping.
Mall.
There is no tax on clothing and shoes in the state of Minnesota. Yeah. So that's a big draw. So we get a lot. And MSP, our international airport, is a hub for Delta. So we get a lot of direct flights from, like, other places where it is expensive to buy clothing and shoes, like Western Europe and other places. A lot of Canadians drive down when the dollar-to-dollar exchange rate is not as bad as it is right now. So that was, and again, we were given latitude, a lot of creativity. I'm pretty sure not everyone thought it was going to work. I wasn't even sure it was going to work. It worked out really great, but the thing is, I had the freedom to do that.
Right.
And so I was emboldened by that, and now I'm going to see where that takes me.
So, Life, where's your next home base?
Well, my home base has always been Minneapolis.
And you're going to return there?
Yeah. I am
there. Well, I knew he was traveling, and I wasn't sure.
No, not so much. I mean, I do travel. But no, I've been back in Minneapolis since 2007. I like it there a lot. If I can help it, I will not live anywhere else. Minneapolis is the best. Just, that's hard stop. I love it there.
Cool.
Cost of living is still low. This is one of the reasons why Gary settled there. Cost of living is low. It's awesome. It's very cosmopolitan now, and it's like a food... Silicon Valley there right now. We've got so much going on with food and cuisine there, and it's just very exciting.
Gary just left, so now we can ask you this question. Do you guys like hang out? Do you guys hang out when you're at home? Ever? Once a
at
month?
At the mall, all the time. Yeah, no. Gary and I, see, I don't like to live downtown, and Gary doesn't like to leave uptown, so we don't bump into each other too much.
Got it. Well, thanks for joining us live.
Yes, thank you.
If people want to contact you and offer you a job, where should they reach you?
LeifPettersen.com. LeifPettersen. So just Google Life Travel Writer and you'll find me. I'm the only Life Travel Writer there is.
Cool.
All right.
Thanks, sir.
Thanks, guys.
See you tonight.
Good
Have fun. And our next guest.
Hi. Lean into the microphone and introduce yourself.
Okay. I'm Ajay Sood. I'm from Delhi, India. And I blog as Traveler. Predominantly, I'm a travel photographer. But I've been Forced into writing.
Well, yeah, you were in fact teaching the workshop on travel photography.
Yes, I was.
Yesterday.
So that's mainly I got into photography, and then I used to send these images to publications, and they'll say, okay, we want 800 words, 1,000 words, or whatever on that. So that's how I got into blogging. And my blog is an aggregation of my published stuff. So that's what I do.
And what's your website?
My website is travelure.in, travelure.in.
And you told me this is your first time in the United States, right?
Yes, this is the first trip.
Right?
Yes, that's right.
So, Huntsville, Alabama is your first stop in the United States.
No, this is the second stop. I was in New York for 5 days.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
What do you think? See, New York is not USA. New York is like the world.
Yes.
Yeah. Huntsville, I would say, is not typically what USA is all about, but it's typically south of USA.
No.
In a way.
No?
No? Maybe. I could be wrong. This is my first trip.
No, this is not typical of it. It's American, but it's not like the south. This is atypical southern city.
This is an odd city. This is like Austin is to Texas. It's a different
city. It's a different world.
It's a different place. One thing, because of the, you know, you're much more likely to walk down the street and literally meet a rocket scientist. So
okay. No, in fact,
that doesn't happen everywhere in the U.S.
True. Anybody I spoke to in New York, and they mentioned that you're going to Alabama. I said, yeah. Oh, that's a different country altogether. That's all right. Okay. So that's...
Yes, you're just not quite in Alabama here.
Well, it's even outside of Alabama, you mean. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Justin says it's kind of hard to hear. I don't know how long that comment's been up, but...
Well, there's not much we can really do about it.
No, it's okay. The mic's on the Facebook stream.
Go to iTunes and download the podcast from there. So what is there anything that you've seen so far in the U.S. that you didn't expect? How much of it met your expectations from what you'd seen on television, movies, things like that?
Lots of things. For example, the museum in New York, that Guggenheim Museum, it's completely wacky. I never expected architecture like that. Seriously, I didn't expect that.
It's a lovely building.
It's a beautiful building.
I don't like the collection, but it's a lovely building.
Well, I was not
my favorite museum.
I was not focusing on the collection. Yeah. I'm saying I was too zapped with the architecture. It's brilliant. It's just simply out of the world. And in Huntsville, right from the airport, it's a complete surprise. The airport itself, I said, okay, they have some 5 or 7 gates, but it's a huge airport for just 7 gates. It's beautiful. It's very well done up.
Clean.
And it's impressive. Mm-hmm. And then the entire drive from the airport to the city, it's such a clean, neat, small town. That's all I can say.
And then you drive by a great big rocket, too.
Absolutely.
Which is pretty cool.
Two rockets.
Well, the one that's upright
is a model.
Yeah, that's not the real one. The one that's
will be partying
horizontal
under
right.
The real one.
Although,
yeah, that's
of
right.
The three Saturn V rockets that still exist,
I
that was
there were
the,
two. Are there three?
There are three, but that's the one here was not intended for actual flight.
Okay, it was a test.
It's the equivalent of like the space shuttle Enterprise that's in New York. But the two that were actually built for Apollos 18 and 19 that never flew are in Houston and Cape Canaveral.
Oh, that's right. 20 got used for the Skylab.
Skylab, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But this was Huntsville. I must confess, was not my first brush with the rockets. I went to this Sea, Land, and Space Museum in New York, Intrepid.
The ship.
Yep. So that's where they've. There's one huge enclosure in which they put up that Enterprise. The space shuttle?
That sure, was sure. The test yeah. Space shuttle that they used to put on the back of a 747 mm-hmm. and they let it glide.
Right.
Right.
So it was non-powered.
Right.
So, yeah, that's the one which I saw there. And mm-hmm. That's huge. So I'm expecting... I'm really looking forward to that horizontal rocket under which we are going to be partying tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. So when we did I was here on a pre-trip and we did a tour... of the facility with one of the guys who was a rocket scientist, a retired rocket scientist, who would point up and say, yeah, I worked on that. And it was, you know, he's looking at the F5, the F1 engine, which is what powered the darn thing. I mean, it was fascinating.
It is fascinating. But this entire experience has been crazy.
Where are you going after this?
I have a fam trip which I'm going on, which is going to Tuscaloosa. So I'm told Tuscaloosa
that
is
interesting.
Yeah, Tuscaloosa is like real down south, is what I'm told. So,
yeah, that should be more.
And a lot of history of the original America, to put it simply. So that's I'm looking forward to that also.
So are there little things you've noticed? Because I notice you go, you know, there's the big things you see, but there's like little things sometimes when I first started to travel.
Yeah.
Power outlets being different, or just the small things that. Yeah.
Okay, the little things which I've noticed, I'll tell you. They, first of all, the water bodies. I didn't expect these water bodies to be sprinkled all over this
the
little town.
Yeah.
You go to this park and it's like...
Oh, it's
a little lake.
Yeah, the lakes and the water bodies and all. So that's one. And they're full of fish, literally. Somebody was describing it. It was like creepy, but he said, you can actually literally walk on those fish and cross the water body. I said, all right. So perhaps that's one. Literally, there's so many of them in that little lake.
Really?
Yeah. The other is we saw a dog there who had been bitten by a rattlesnake. So that is not something which rattlesnakes are not there in India at all.
You have snakes. You have vipers.
We have snakes. We have vipers, yeah, but those are rare. Cobras are common. But a rattlesnake, I have only seen in Western movies.
Huh? Think so, as far as I know.
No, but India has a lot of... I think you have more snake bite fatalities than...
We have snakes.
Than Australia.
Yeah.
Australia, that is true.
Sure, but rattlesnake, I have always kind of been fascinated with, thanks to all those... Wild West movies. So.
Oh, I encountered one in Montana, like on a path, and it was coiled up and rattling in the middle of the day.
Oh
and
my God.
It just kind of like, I came upon it. It was just sitting there, and then you just back away and walk away around it. And
I have never encountered one, but my father grew up on the Platte River in Colorado, which is a very dry, flat part of Colorado, and I know one time they were out on a ranch in Last Chance, Colorado, for a while they lived there, and they had one period of time where they like killed a rattlesnake a day for 2 week period.
My God.
They have all these stories about my grandfather going to jump on his horse and he hears a rattlesnake, you know, at his feet and jumps over the horse because he's got the adrenaline going now. And he hears the rattlesnake again, he looks down and it's still at his feet, and so he jumps over the horse again because it had actually already struck. But he was a cowboy and he was wearing woolen chaps. Do you know what chaps are that protect your legs on the horse? And it had gotten caught, so he'd carried the rattlesnake over the horse twice before tired of this whole thing.
Oh my God.
So.
This is crazy. Yeah. Another thing is this little... we went to the botanical garden. That's where the workshop that I conducted.
Oh, that would be a great place to do that.
So over there also there is a water body.
Yeah.
And that's full of turtles.
Yeah.
So, and they're nice, cute, colorful ones. So
did you take the students in the butterfly house too?
Yeah, in fact, there was a one-hour exercise of creating a one-shot and multi-shot stories. So, so they went all around. So that was interesting. And so that's broadly what my experience in the U.S. till now is. It's not pretty long yet. It's about a week, but those are my impressions.
Very cool.
All right.
I will be heading to India for the first time in November, so I'll be
welcome.
Interested to do it from the other way around. So.
Absolutely. In fact, do get in touch. I'll share itineraries with you. Whichever kind of things that are of interest to you, I'll give you those itineraries.
Well, thank you.
Very kind of you.
We're taking a group of listeners to the kind of India 101, you know, the Taj Mahal and the Red Fort. And
India 101. Yeah. I like that.
The thing with India is it's not just big, but it's really a bunch of different countries in one country.
I've been reading more Indian history over the last year, and it's been fascinating because I know so little about it.
It's not one of those places you can just say, well, you know, I saw the Taj Mahal, I went to India.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's not even like the U.S. where we can say, oh, the South is different from the Midwest or something.
Different languages.
Completely, different languages.
Cultures.
everything.
Different languages, different architecture, different cuisine, you name it. Mm-hmm. Culturally, they are different. Language, the dialects are different. Mm-hmm. Even within the same region, there could be 20 different dialects.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing.
What area do you live in?
I live near Delhi, in the suburb of Delhi, called mm-hmm. Gurgaon. It is like a satellite town of Delhi.
I was amazed driving from Delhi to Agra when you crossed into Uttar Pradesh. The laws were different, and so when you, as soon as you get out of Delhi and you go there, you started to see new apartment buildings, and the roads were different, and because there was a different set of laws and everything, and it was very interesting just seeing that change. That there's just all that diversity going on. Not, you know, it's beyond even culture.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
I think it's always interesting to us as a travel writers, travel bloggers, and such, that we always have a tendency to think that, well, I was there and I saw that, I understand that place. And it's humbling when you realize, you know, how much time it takes to understand a place.
The only place I can say I have done is San Marino.
Sure. I'll give you that.
I've walked across the country.
Yeah.
I've been to almost every... I mean, granted, it's a small country, but...
And there is an episode of Amateur Traveler with Gary talking about the...
Most serene republic of San Marino.
All the small countries of Europe. So.
By the way, how big is San Marino?
It's one city.
30,000 people, maybe.
Yeah.
So it's one of the smallest countries in the world.
How many miles across? How far do you walk?
Huntsville's probably bigger.
Yeah.
Huntsville is bigger.
Right. I've walked across all of Monaco. I took a scooter across most of Funafuti, which is the main place in Tuvalu. So I drove as far as I could, literally from one end to the other. That country is about a little under 10,000 people.
You probably have a...
I had a question.
Yeah.
So India recently passed a law about their currency. Mm-hmm. And I saw a lot about this, about how they limited the highest note that you could have. I forget what it is, how many rupees that...
Right.
What's been the result of that, because I know a lot of people were complaining about it. The intent was to cut down on bribery and corruption. Mm-hmm. Has it made things difficult?
Okay, let me tell you, it's not a law that they passed. They demonetized a couple of denominations of currency.
Right.
So they demonetized 500 rupee and a 1,000 rupee.
Meaning it's no longer legal tender.
Yeah, they are not legal tender anymore. And... although the announcement was made with the intent of saying it'll curb the black money transactions, it'll also curb those who are hoarding black money and in some way affect them, and it'll unearth the black money in the economy. But after about 50 days of that period, when there was this restriction of the amount of money you could draw from the bank, what came about was the number of cash transactions in the country reduced and the number of digital transactions increased. So that is something which in the long run is going to make a difference in terms of genuinely rooting out the parallel economy. So to that extent, I think although they marketed it differently, their real intent was this, to actually digitize all the transactions if they can.
Sure.
So which is what the effect or the impact of that has been. So I think it's a brilliant move.
Interesting.
And in fact, so many people are saying that there are other economies who can actually learn from this.
I was in Uzbekistan last year, and their highest denomination note is about the equivalent of a dollar bill.
Oh,
and
wow.
So you have to get stacks of money. Like, you need $100 is like a duffel bag full of cash. You think you're doing a drug deal, right? And you have these bricks of money. Or better yet, if you talk to Shane Dallas, he did a trip to Somaliland where they literally have guys at a table with just stacks of money because you're dealing with like bricks of cash to do normal transactions. And from what I've heard from a lot of travelers that were going to India is that it made getting cash out kind of difficult. Going to an ATM machine, there were limits that you needed to carry around. It's a pain to just have to deal in cash because you have to carry so much of it.
Right. In fact, they made it difficult to lay your hands on cash, and that's what kind of forcibly changed the nation's earlier habit of only transacting in cash or mostly transacting in cash to transacting digitally.
The first thing I thought of when I heard that India was doing this was that I should go and buy Bitcoins because it was going to probably drive the demand up. Well, I'm dead serious. Mm-hmm. Because if you want to bribe someone in India now, I would do it in Bitcoins instead of doing it in cash.
I mean, you're right.
I'm sure there's an effort for that.
You're right.
All right, we're going to move on to the next. So why don't you just tell us one more time where people can find you online?
Okay, my Twitter hashtag is handle is Traveler Ajay, TraveleurAjay, and pretty much everywhere else, which is Instagram or even my website, is all Traveler and Traveler.in. And Google Plus is something which is thanks to Shane. Is my biggest traffic generator right now on my website, which
really?
Is Traveler.in. Yeah. Hmm. So Google Plus, I'm now a verified account, and I have featured collections, and there are 25,000, 30,000, 20,000 followers on various collections of mine over there.
Terrific.
So that's the scene. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks so much.
Thank you for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
Yes, please.
Hi.
We should do something like Shark Tank.
Sure.
Because this is kind of the same thing, where we just kind of sit on a dais, people like present ideas, and then we just shoot them down. And you'd be the nice one, and I'd be like the real bastard, and then Chris would be really reasonable. Anyways, lean into the mic, introduce yourself, and tell us where your website.
Hi, I'm Archana Singh. I'm from India, but not based out of India anymore. I've been traveling around the world. I have a brand strategy background. So before here, I worked for Coca-Cola. So I used to look after their brand strategy. And I'm a travel journalist by passion. So profession, like the bread comes from brand strategy, and the passion comes from travel writing. So yeah, and you can find me everywhere with the name of Travel See Write. It's simple. I travel, I see, I write about it. And I usually write, I usually go to offbeat places, and I usually look for stories which people don't know about. So offbeat places and unknown stories. So that's what I talk
about.
So
the most recent example.
Okay. I'm on US tour for like 2 months. This is my first time in US. So the places which I chose, usually when you ask people, you know, they're going to US and which are the places they're going to go. So it's New York, San Francisco, LA, right? But what I did was
you went to Kansas.
No. Here we are. So what I did was, instead of choosing, like, spreading myself thin, I chose just few places. So I started with San Francisco. But what I did a road trip from San Francisco to Port Orford in Oregon. And the funny thing was, I got down at the airport, and the immigration officer asked me, so where are you going next? I said, I'm going to Port Orford. He said, what? I haven't heard about it. Let me Google it. And then he said, wow, I have never heard about it. It looks so nice. And he said, give me your Instagram handle. I'm going to follow you. So that's why.
That's
so,
terrific.
Yeah. So even in San Francisco, you know, I went around the national parks and other places. So that was like in California and a bit of Oregon. The place which I really liked was New Mexico.
Oh.
It was lovely. You know, it was nothing like US. Okay, I haven't seen much of US, but whatever it was, you know, like I could, the people were extremely nice. The food was too good.
Which town?
I went to a couple of places. First was Albuquerque. So there was this powwow, the Gathering of Nations. It blew my mind. It was so good.
Now, I love the fact that she said it was nothing like the US. The people were nice and the food was good. So what I heard in that.
Actually, okay, I have to admit, you know, we always stereotype people, right? So what we do, we say, okay, Americans, they are like little cocky. That's what the image goes like.
And oh, yeah, we are cocky. Yeah. That is absolutely true. One of the interesting things that I've seen looking at other people look at the U.S., some of the tour guides we've had overseas, one of them said, I really like having Americans. But he said it's very different because at the end of the tour, I'll always have these invitations. When you come to the U.S., come stay with us, and they'll mean it. He said, I don't get that everywhere. But when he said that to us, it's like, well, of course. Yes, if you come to the U.S., you should absolutely stay with us. And it's just a very normal thing. So we can be friendly, but we are definitely cocky. There's no question. And arrogant, yeah. There's no question about that.
Except you, Chris. Me and Gary, sure.
So you
not
clearly,
you.
You clearly didn't hear my last episode of Amateur Traveler. Maybe it's the one that's coming out. Sure. It's either the one that just came out or the one that's coming out next. Has the one that you've been on talking about Israeli UNESCO sites come out yet?
No.
Yes. Okay. It was in that one. I basically read the last iTunes review I got, which was basically, I'm stopping listening to this show because this host is just way too full of himself. I don't remember the exact terms.
Oh my gosh. You know, that must have been
he keeps
to
correcting
one show.
People, you know, because he thinks he's a know-it-all or something like that. All right.
I'm going to go on your reviews,
I
and right beneath it, I'm going to list his name and say, what a jerk. You don't know Chris. So where are you headed next?
Okay, I'm next going to New York, but I'll be spending less time in New York, and I'll be going to Albany and Lake Placid and
United. I went to college just across the river from Albany.
Oh, wow.
In Troy, New York.
Uh-huh.
So where Uncle Sam is from. The Uncle Sam character is named after Uncle Sam, who is a guy who used to ship beef to the U.S. Army in the War of 1812, and he would market U.S. for Uncle Sam, and then they confused that with, it was a U.S. for Uncle Sam or U.S. for United States.
Wow.
They started calling U.S. Uncle Sam after this guy from Albany. It is also the home of the collarless shirt, where the detachable collar and cuffs. Mm-hmm. So, that was the part that got dirty from the shirts, and so you made them detachable mm-hmm. so that when you're back in the days of hand washing, you could wash just those parts. I don't know why they didn't have detachable armpits, but they didn't.
Don't know.
That's interesting.
It's Chris, unfortunately a city that peaked in like 1812.
Chris, I think you would win any trivia contest anywhere.
Yes, but yeah. I'm a show-off know-it-all, apparently.
That's why I stopped listening to your podcast.
Exactly. I can understand that.
I just got sick of it.
We started recommending people to listen. Just tune into Rick Steves. You know.
So tell us this. When you're trying to find these out-of-the-way places, what resources do you use?
Okay, what I do is, obviously, Google is the do-it-all and everything. You find it there. But my major source of information comes from locals. For example, when I was coming to U.S., so I know Mike Schubeck. So the maximum credit goes to him. So he kind of recommended all the places where
Sorry, to who?
Mike Schubeck.
Oh, okay. Mike's Road Trip.
Mike's Road Trip. He's perfect. Like,
in fact,
he's the right.
You just did a road trip with him. Arizona.
So that was like fantastic.
Northern Arizona.
Northern Arizona. So that was like wonderful. So he recommended all these interesting places. So that's what happened. And I talk a lot. I talk a lot to locals, you know. So I would always, like, if I'm sitting at a place, so I would talk to the people who are there, you know, try to get something out of them. And I use that in my stories, you know, when I go back. And, how I do generally with my stories, I don't research a lot on Google. I first go to a place, get a feel of it, absorb it, and see what are the points which I observe, which kind of, you know, I think they have some story angle or something, and then I go back, then, and I usually take cards from people or note down their number and all those things, and then I write back to them later on when I'm like writing a story and delving deep in that. But it's mostly the locals that I do about, and I would often search, okay, offbeat places in, say, Santa Fe, or offbeat places in Arizona. So usually, my mind is into that. I read a lot of books. So all those things.
Is there any place you've encountered in the U.S. that kind of reminds you of some place in India?
Actually, I would say the Native American villages, whether it was your Arizona or...
Not what I would have guessed, but okay.
Yeah, because, you know, a lot of rituals. There was this Aji spa that I... you're saying?
So you were up in... You're thinking of, like, northern Arizona, like the Navajo?
These they have, for example, the cuisine, like...
You're just saying that because we call them Indians.
No, it's not because of that. In fact, you know, so my friend was, like, chuckling on me. He said, so when I went to powwow, so they said, he was asking that, okay, so how do Indians react seeing an Indian in the Indian audience? I said, they don't treat me as Indian. They treat me as East Indian. Right? You are not a Native American.
Did you just tell them, I heard this was for Indians, and so I can't?
Yeah. In fact, one of the guys, when I was visiting there, so he was from, I think, Florida or somewhere, so he asked me, where are you from? I said, I'm from India. He said, no, you don't look Indian. I said, why? He said, you know, they are very dark. I said, no, they are not always dark. He said, no, you look like you are like from either a Native American or you are from like Southeast Asia or something. I said, no, I'm not that. And I'm from like, India is a diverse country. So,
sure. Yeah.
So you people.
You know, the story is why Native Americans are called Indians. Because Columbus thought he was
discovered India. Yeah, exactly.
Well, we have a tip for you coming from one of our listeners, Kerwin McKenzie. Mm-hmm. And when he heard that you're going to New York, he wanted to chime in and say that upstate New York is pretty amazing.
Okay, great.
So that is a tip for you.
And I'm trying to get someone to do an episode of Amateur Traveler on upstate New York because I haven't lived there for a long time. But it's a lovely area. It really is. The Hudson Valley and that area. I'm with Kerwin. I highly recommend it.
And Gary, you are getting a request to talk about your great Parks Canada experience.
He works for Parks Canada.
Okay.
And I just mentioned I already didn't talk about it. So.
Got it. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Go ahead and tell us where our listeners can find you one more time.
Hello again. So you can find me by the name of Travel C. Wright, whether on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, website, everywhere. Remember, it's Travel C as in S-E-E, Wright, W-R-I-T-E. So Travel C. Wright.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Who's next? Don, come on up.
We don't have any idea what order people came, so.
They came in at the same time.
Oh, okay. Don, you have been on the show once or twice, I think, as well.
I have indeed.
Welcome back, friend.
It's good to be back.
But introduce yourself to those who don't know you.
I'm Don.
Come to the microphone here.
Hello, I'm Don George. I'm a travel writer and editor.
And you've been a travel writer for a couple years now.
A few, just a few. Yes. I've been a travel writer and editor for about 40 years, before any of you were born.
Except for all of us.
The only thing I can say I've done that long is breathe.
Yeah, so it's great to be back at TBEX. It's great to see you all.
How'd your workshop go today?
I think it went really well.
You were doing a workshop.
It was fun. Travel writing workshop.
Was I in your workshop, by the way?
You were not there. Okay. I kept looking for you. No, it was really fun. We met in the Constitution Village, which is a wonderful recreation of an 1819 village. And
where the Alabama Constitution was
written and signed.
Here in Huntsville, Alabama.
Here in beautiful Huntsville, Alabama, which is totally changing my view of Alabama.
And did you notice, just to put the Huntsville in perspective, just outside are the recreation of footsteps of on the moon by one of the astronauts. It's literally just outside the Huntsville Constitution.
I did not see that.
That's sort of the whole history
that
of Huntsville.
That pretty much says it all right there.
It's right there.
Really?
Well, if they faked the footprints, then clearly they must have faked the moon landing, because how else would they be able to make the footprints?
There you go.
There you go.
QED.
How many students did you have?
10 students.
And is this a special add-on to TBEX, or tell us how TBEX lists
it? It's a day before the actual conference begins workshop. So people signed up.
They had to pay extra for it.
As they should.
Yes, right. Such a deal.
Expedited quality time with the doctor.
I know, right? It's priceless. Priceless. It was very fun.
The man who wrote the book on travel writing.
So I gave a condensed version of the book on travel writing, and then we walked around, and we did sort of an immersive day in the life of a travel writer, compressed into about an hour and a half. We walked around Huntsville, and I talked about, if I had parachuted into Huntsville to write an article about Huntsville, this is what I would be looking for, and these are the notes I'd be taking, and these are the people I'd be talking with.
If you had parachuted in, you would write a fair amount about the parachute in experience.
Yes. Metaphorically speaking.
I know that we don't have to necessarily talk about things in the chronological order, but I would think the parachuting would be fairly...
Would be very interesting, right. But here I am in Huntsville.
Okay.
So what am I looking for? So this is what I looked for.
And you were walking.
We engaged
downtown
with locals
or through the.
So we did the village first of all, Constitution Village, and talked to some of the people there who were in 19th century dress, and we met a.
Hopefully, they were people working for the village.
Yes, they were working at the village. They told us about the history of the village. We met a silversmith. We met a carpenter. It was really interesting. It was fascinating. It was great. And so that was really fun. And then we went into downtown, which was also fascinating. There was an annual day of prayer going on at the courthouse. So that was fascinating.
Annual, like once a year?
Once a year. It's a national thing, apparently, yeah. But I had not heard of
all
it.
All the rest of the days of the year?
No prayer.
No prayer.
Just today. They
just
cram
today.
All the prayers in on one day.
It's very efficient.
Yeah.
So that was interesting. There were a bunch of people gathered outside the courthouse for that.
Did you look for the ducks? You know, there's a duck trail. Did you know this?
This is Chris's second time in Huntsville, Alabama.
Clearly the expert on Huntsville.
When you're downtown, you can get a pamphlet from the Visitors Bureau. If you were here with Cora, you can find little brass ducks. It's 15 of them in a trail around downtown.
Chris, stop being so cocky.
The ducks.
Trying to like add
right.
trivia.
No, I actually thought that. You'd be interested.
The go-to guy on Huntsville.
I'm gonna stop listening to this podcast.
No, we missed the ducks. I'll have to come back.
So it is probably easier to create a list of places you haven't written for than those you have. You work for National Geographic, Lonely Planet, BBC, a bunch of others.
San Francisco what do you, Examiner.
Chronicle or?
Both.
Well, like I said, it's easier to make a list of places you haven't. So what are you doing now?
So I'm still editor at large for National Geographic Traveler. So I still write a lot for them.
But you do have a new venture that you've been doing just this year for the first time.
The
scooping
BBC
me too.
Travel?
The tours.
Oh, the tours. Oh, right. Oh, the tours.
You mean the one you just had in L.A.?
No.
No.
A different
Japan
tour.
Japan tours. Yeah. I've been leading Japan tours.
Look at you.
I'm a tour guide.
That.
He knows about Huntsville. He knows about me. He's amazing. He knows it.
Tell us about these Japan tours.
So I've begun leading tours to Japan for Geographic Expeditions, which is an adventure travel company based in the beautiful Presidio in San Francisco. And they're people I've known forever. When I was the travel editor at the San Francisco paper, I first met the people there, and we've become friends through the years. And they asked me if I would like to lead in a tour of Japan. And I said, sure, why not? I'll try that.
A country that you love
and country that I love and have lived in and speak the language relatively well. And so, yeah, it's a tour of Kyoto and Shikoku.
How long?
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
How much?
How much does it cost?
Yes. Let's pimp your wares,
well, you have
huh?
You have to go on the website to see.
This is not your backpacking trip.
It's not your backpacking
trip. It's
2 weeks. It's like $10,000, $11,000, not including airfare. So it's
sure.
But you're traveling with Don George.
Absolutely.
So
that alone is worth it.
Now, have you found that the people who are signing on are complete strangers, or are they fans of yours?
About 50-50, I would say. A lot of them are people who are looking for some alternative way to see Japan. And a lot of them know about me, too. But I think a lot of them are kind of, I've done Tokyo. I've done the standard sort of routes. I'd like to see what's off the beaten path. And others of them are people who say, I've never been to Japan, but I know I could do Tokyo anytime. I'd like to do this trip because it takes me off the beaten path.
Now, Kyoto's not exactly off the beaten path.
No.
But I don't know Shikoku.
Shikoku's way off the beaten path.
Okay.
Shikoku's the fourth main Japanese island, but it's the smallest of the four main Japanese islands.
Okay, yeah.
So it's very small and it's very unvisited, but it happens to be where my wife is from.
Oh.
So I know it well.
Oh,
I've been there many times. And I wrote a big article about Shikoku for Traveler, for National Geographic Traveler, which was kind of the introducing Shikoku to the world article. And after that article came out, GOX came to me and said, we would like to do a trip based on your article.
Interesting.
And I said, that's a brilliant idea. So we did it. We're doing it. And I just got back from two back-to-back trips in Japan. They're limited to 8 people, so 16 people total over 4 weeks, and it was really fun, and it's just great to see people discover this Japan that they had no idea existed, because everybody thinks big cities, you know, mega cities and robots and anime and stuff like that, and there's this country Japan that people just don't know about that's beautiful and tranquil, and the people are just really kind-hearted, simple country people. It was really fantastic.
And what a nice-sized group.
Oh, 8 people's ideal. You can walk into a little tiny restaurant and kind of take it over and banter with the chef and have fun, and it's really great. So I've really enjoyed
that. That's actually one of the biggest disadvantages, I think, of the big bus tour is it limits where you can stay. It limits where you can eat.
Yeah. No, that, you see a different place that way. With you. The dynamic when you walk into a restaurant with 40 people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're not in that country anymore.
No. Yeah.
You're in your tour land, kind of. So, yeah, with 8 people, it was great. And this is a new quiver in my professional, no, a new arrow in my professional quiver to be a tour guide.
Do you think you'll expand to any other countries or any other?
Sure. Ooh. I'd love to.
Any that you want to pitch them?
Well, GOX doesn't go to the countries I would probably pitch, but the places I know pretty well would be Greece and Japan, Greece and France. So I'd love to lead a tour of Greece.
The Champagne region.
You got it. See, he does know me very well. Don't you think? Behind the scenes in Champagne.
You go to Epernay.
I'll do that.
It's a lovely area.
It is. We could, yeah. So I'd like to do that. So if anybody out there wants to do a tour of Champagne country, I'm your guide. I'm the man.
Chris has connections.
I'm sure he does.
Chris has no
connections. I'm sure he does.
You're taking people to India, and you've took people to Egypt. And
so you have connections?
He does tours through Intrepid.
So yeah.
I heard, yeah. That's great.
It's not $10,000. Apparently, spending a week with Chris Christensen is much less draw than spending a week with
Maybe you should
up
the price.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Got to monetize this stuff.
How's Wanderlust doing, Don?
Wanderlust is doing great.
Let's tell all our listeners about your personal book.
So 2 years ago, I finally got around to collecting the best travel writing of Don George, 35 pieces from 40 years of world wandering. It's called The Way of Wanderlust. It keeps coming out. It keeps selling. I keep getting nice comments from people. It's really kind of amazing. It's got legs.
You have to wait to come out with this book until you felt you'd really peaked?
Yeah. I didn't have enough pieces.
Now that the work is good, you could say
it's all downhill from here.
This work or
better get it now.
Or will there be a best of Don?
There's going to be an even better of Don George.
Maybe you could go down a notch. The okay.
Yeah, pretty good.
Not the best.
I'm thinking of a series. A complete waste of time.
Right. And then it'll be the Don George book you really shouldn't buy because it's really not.
I want to see Don George bloopers, anthology.
The outtakes.
Don George unplugged, yeah.
So that's really still a thrill for me. Every time somebody just today came up to me with the book and asked me to sign it, and just it's a very personal book. I mean, it's really my statement of who I am in the world and why I do what I do. And so to have that out in the world still is an incredible thrill for me. And I feel very blessed about the whole thing. And it's still selling, and they're still reprinting it. And so, yay. So that's nice, yeah. Still going to do Book Passage this summer. Book Passage is coming up in August.
For year
26.
26.
For those people that one day of Don George teaching travel writing is not enough,
exactly. So 4 days in August, 10 to 13 this summer. With
karaoke thrown in,
exactly. The karaoke package is available for people who
want
that.
Is that extra? Don't tell me you don't charge extra for the karaoke. Oh, my God.
So who are some of the speakers that will be featured this year?
Well, we're still in the process of lining up a bunch of people, but a lot of great, a lot of the great Bay Area writers will be there. Great editors. Let's see. Jim Benning is going to be there. Editors from Afar, Sunset, Westways Magazine. Elizabeth Harriman's going to be there. Pauline Frommer is going to be there.
Excellent.
I think we have a really nice lineup of great writers and photographers, again. And we try to vary the offerings every year a little bit to tweak them so that they're relevant. So we're going to do more digital stuff, more online stuff this year. It's like the best 4 years, but the best 4 days of the year.
Yes.
A lot of my favorite people.
And we do try to tell people about it every year before it happens. And it's such an intimate experience, it almost doesn't matter who's speaking, right?
In a lot of ways, it's
true. It is such a special, special week.
It is. It's you know, summer camp for travel writers and photographers, and you bond that way. There's always a lot of tears on the final day. There's a lot of learning that goes on. There's a lot of sharing. I love that the people who are there, who are at the peaks of their careers, are humble enough that they realize we're all in this together. There's no prima donnas, and everybody shares what they know. And it's a really wonderful experience in that way, I think.
And you can learn new things going more than once.
Yeah, a lot of, about a third of our people are repeats now, and that's really great. I love that. So that's really something I always look forward
Very
to
cool.
a lot.
All right, listeners, get yourself to bookpassage.com and sign up for the Book Passage Travel Writers and Photographers Conference.
Thank you. Yes, please.
And I think we've got one last guest here.
Yes. Don, one more time, how can people find you online?
Don-George.com.
Isn't it Don underscore George?
Oh, that's, well, so my website is Don-George.com.
Okay, on Twitter.
On Twitter, I'm Don underscore George. On Instagram, I'm Don underscore George underscore travels. One day I'm going to get the Don George without any underscores.
I like it. Thanks so much, Don.
Thank
we'll
you.
See
Great
you
to see you guys. See you tonight.
First day on Instagram, I reserved every possible permutation of Don George I could think of. That's why he got stuck with it.
And you're waiting for the payout.
Yeah. Come a little closer.
Hi.
And introduce yourself.
I'm Sarah Longstaff. I'm here in Huntsville, Alabama for the first time. And it's a fabulous city. I'm just, it's almost like there's two Huntsvilles. There's
one in Texas?
Well, kind of two in Alabama, in that you've got the space exploration, space nut kind of thing, and you've got the old, you know, Alabama of, you know, the Civil War and all the history of the South. So,
and you didn't quite finish the introduction. I don't think you said your website.
My website is ozflygirl.com. That's with an OZ. And Twitter handle is at ozflygirl747. And Instagram is the same, at ozflygirl747.
And you are from the land of Oz?
I am indeed. I'm from Brisbane, Australia, but I was initially born in Sydney, and I've lived in Darwin as well, but I reside back in Brisbane, in our Sunshine State.
Been there? Beautiful place?
Yeah.
Special place. I've been there too. I was there for about 6 months.
Oh, wow. You're almost a local then.
Many years ago.
I spent a night there. Just like
Oh, Chris.
We've got to work on you. Right.
But I bet you still know your Brisbane trivia.
I have an aunt who lives on the Sunshine Coast, actually.
Oh, okay, just up the road.
Is the casino still alive and well?
Well, there's the Treasury Casino in Brisbane, and there's also Jupiter's on the Gold Coast. That was a little bit older.
Treasury.
Conrad Treasury in Brisbane. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Beautiful building.
It is. It's a classic old building.
I also really like Parisian Beach and Noosa.
Parisian, that is such a, like, how do you know about that?
Because I stayed with people who live there.
That's a secret.
Long time ago.
This is from the sand in her bra days.
Was it, or was it before then? I was 30, so 15 years ago.
Okay.
I turned 30 in Brisbane at the mall.
Oh, right, Queen Street Mall.
Got my haircut that day, yes, Queen Street Mall.
What, did a hairdresser or did you cut it?
No, at a salon. At a salon on the Queen Street Mall.
I didn't know how late in the night it was and whether you, like, how many champagnes later.
Exactly.
So, are you just here for TBEX or were you in the U.S.?
No, I just came to TBEX. This is my fourth TBEX.
From Australia you came?
Yes, I did, yes.
I think you win.
Well, the longest travel time I've heard is 54 hours. That's the time to beat.
Well, I didn't sort of add it up, but yeah, it's sort of...
I think, flying in from Kansas.
Yeah, but I think, like, as
distance,
the crow flies, that might be the...
That's pretty close to the other side of the world, yes.
It is. But the people here are absolutely lovely, and it's like coming home to see old friends, even though it's my first visit. Even when I was planning my trip and looking at TripAdvisor for things to do in Huntsville, I thought, this is so much here. I thought, I've got to come back. So I hadn't even arrived, but I'm already sort of planning my next
trip. How many times have you been called honey or dear or whatever so far?
I think I was called...
That's always what I know I'm in the South. Yeah.
Might have been called love at IHOP by Billy, who was my server. Yeah, but
we'll
that's okay.
That. We'll
yeah.
I think my Uber driver called me sweetheart or sweetie.
But Yeah, it goes with the territory.
Yeah. I feel offended if I'm not. So. Mm.
What do they call you, Chris?
Yeah, something like that. Honey, beer.
It's did they call me? Sir.
That's what you get, Gary.
But all right. Our waitress at the brew pub we were at the other day used some honorific
term of endearment.
Some term of endearment. I don't remember what hers was, but I thought, oh yeah, okay, that's where we are.
So, what are you hoping to get out of the conference this weekend?
Well, it's always good to make contacts, and because just through networking as well as the good content of the sessions that you go to, just meeting up with people that you've met before at other TBEXs, and just learning a lot of knowledge by networking. Mm-hmm. But there's really great content in the sessions as well, and you always take back something that you can apply to your business. And I think, you know, in these times where there's so much automation, it's an ongoing learning process. You can't sort of learn it all and then stop learning. It's, you know, constantly evolving.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize we've switched to do this podcast entirely automated now.
Mm.
So that was a big time saver.
What? What's this?
Was that a joke?
Yes, that was a joke.
Yeah. Oh.
Chris works hard to produce our podcast.
Leave the funny stuff to me.
Okay.
I hope that you've come all this way. You're going to get to see a little bit more of America. Are you?
Well,
you
I'm just coming to Huntsville, and that's
really?
It.
Really? And then yes. You're turning around and going home.
Mm-hmm. But I've seen so much. Well, I've been here. Like, I can't believe how much stuff there is in Huntsville. Like, I wouldn't have thought there's a kangaroo, but I saw a kangaroo yesterday. At the Harmony Park Safari. And
leave it to an Australian to find the kangaroo in Alabama.
That's right. So, beer, barbecue, kangaroo. So it's just like home, really.
Mm. Big barbecue festival here Friday and Saturday. Not associated with the conference. It's just downtown at the Railroad Depot.
Right.
Some of the better barbecue chefs in the country. We'll be here.
Really? Are we going to get to see any of that?
Only if you have time to get
only
down.
If we stay up later after.
Is this one of these deals where they give out those obscenely large trophies?
I don't.
Like all these barbecue things? Yeah. Like
that sounds like Texas.
Yeah. Well, there's a barbecue circuit where they do competitive barbecue. And so they always give out these ridiculously large trophies. We're talking like 3 to 5 feet tall trophies. So they can put them in the front of their restaurant or whatever. And they're just... Yeah, that's what they do.
I've heard of those contests in Reno, Nevada.
Yeah, but there's like a circuit of these things, and then they go from city to city, and you buy tickets and eat barbecue. Yeah,
sounds good to me.
That works for me.
Mm-hmm.
So is this your first time in Alabama, I assume?
First time to, kind of second. I've been across the border when I drove from Atlanta to see some people that had Catahoula leopard dogs just across the state line. But officially, like, first visit to see a city in depth. So,
what is a Catahoula leopard dog?
It's a cross between, it's four breeds actually in one, Mastiff, Red Wolf, Greyhound and Beauceron, and they're the state dog of Louisiana, but they're quite common in the south of the U.S.
Large dog.
A large dog, yeah, probably about, 80, 90 pounds, but they can be smaller than that, but they're an awesome dog, yeah. Huh. If you Google it, you'll see all sorts of, different... versions of them, but yeah, they're fantastic dogs, but of course I'm totally biased.
I didn't even know states had official.
I did not.
Wisconsin is the American Water Spaniel.
What?
Are you kidding? You made this
hey,
up?
Can you Google up what it is for California?
I believe it's the Chihuahua, the purse Chihuahua.
But in Wisconsin, that dog was first bred in the town of New London, which is in the county. That's why I know that. It's right next to Hortonville.
Yeah, no, I had an aunt who lived in New London, the area.
Official state dogs. I don't know if California has them, but...
What about Alabama?
It's probably a hound.
Official state dogs.
Apparently there's two dogs that are buried at the Maple Hill Cemetery.
Okay.
That were there's a lot of that's one place I haven't been yet, but there's a lot of great statues there, and as well as a few
I have not as well.
Governors buried, either governors or presidents. I'm not sure.
That is amusing.
What is the state
Only a few states have them, actually.
There's about a handful of states with
Louisiana does, Alabama doesn't, California doesn't, Alaska does.
Texas does.
I wonder what gives a state the kind of the notion that they've got to have a state dog.
There's all sorts of crazy official state things that every state does.
Yeah.
Like they just, like the state of Wisconsin.
Everybody
has
like a motto
fossil,
and a bird and.
State rock, like state tree, state flower.
Yeah.
Wisconsin's the wood violet, the state bird is the robin.
California is the California quail, and the state tree
poppy.
Is, I believe, the redwood. State flower is the California poppy.
Hey, Chris, for your next trip, North Carolina chose the plot hound as its state
there
dog.
There we go. There we
P-L-O-T-T.
Go. Good to know. Good to know.
You might be able to pull that off at your next conference.
States are always doing this sort of meaningless official state whatever state.
It's good. It keeps the legislatures from passing real laws.
State pies, states, yeah. So.
Oh, Texas has the Blue Lacy. That is a beautiful dog.
Blue Lacy, I've never heard of that.
Gotten distracted from travel.
Where are you? Do you have any more trips planned for 2017?
2017. Well, probably coming back to the States again. Like I love coming over a couple of times a year. And Hawaii's a favorite because it's a good place to break the journey to come home because
Yes. It
limits the jet lag because you can go from mainland US to Hawaii, have a couple of days, stop over. And then when you're flying from Honolulu to, say, Sydney or Brisbane, it's a day flight. So the good thing is you're not getting up super early. It's 10 hours. So even if you have to sit in economy like most of us, it's doable. And then you arrive in Australia in the evening. So you can check into your hotel straight away, not have to, you know, be sitting around the foyer for 6 hours waiting for your room to become available. And because of the time difference, Hawaii is 20 hours behind the east coast of Australia, except when we're on daylight saving. That the hours when it's, say, 10 p.m. in Hawaii, it's 6 p.m. in Australia on the east coast. So it's very similar time zones. So you could probably literally hit the ground running, arrive in Australia, go to your hotel, check in, and then wake up in the morning, and you'd be pretty much
right.
No,
I like to do the same thing. Mm-hmm. I think of it as a four-hour difference, not a 20-hour difference.
Yeah, well...
Ignore the day part.
I mean, it's a great way to turn 50, you know, Hawaii 5-0, and then you get sort of, you know... Well, not quite a 48-hour birthday, but, you know, a 44-hour birthday, which
very
is cool. Good, yeah.
Well, we need to start to wrap this up because we've got a party to go to.
Yes, we do.
That's true.
Well,
you get the last word. Where can people find you again?
OzFlyGirl747, that's Instagram and Twitter, and my website is OzFlyGirl.com. That's Oz as in OZ, not AUS.
All right.
Okay, OzFlyGirl, it's nice to meet you.
Well, thanks for having me, and look forward to seeing you tonight. Over a drink or two.
And at the rest of the conference.
Yes, indeed. Thanks all for having me.
You're welcome.
Sure. And for those still following along on Facebook Live, of which there are 8 people, I'm guessing most of them aren't even necessarily paying attention. It's just they went to go to the bathroom or something and they left it running. that wraps it up. And for those listening on the podcast, we don't mention this very often, but go to iTunes and leave a review. We haven't really made a request for that in a long time because it does help. I think we're getting way more listeners than we are reviews.
Most
of our reviews are really old from when we launched the podcast.
We need recent positive reviews.
Positive reviews. So not leave a review that Chris is a blowhard who...
If you hate the podcast, just stop listening. Just don't tell anyone about it. Pretend it never existed.
If this is your first time listening, don't bother leaving a review. If you're a longtime listener and fan of the show, we've been doing this for 8 years, and we started after the very first T-Bex. So this is, in a way, an anniversary for us.
That's right.
If you are one of those fans, please write a positive review.
All right. And until next time, when we actually do a real show, and Lord knows when that's going to be, make sure to get outside. And if you get the opportunity, definitely go and check out Huntsville, Alabama.